You've got to be an engineer to work one of these little recorders. And that leaves me out. Appreciate the opportunity that the elders have given me to speak to you this evening. What I want to discuss, I don't expect to take very long. Hopefully it's not going to take very long. But from time to time we sing such songs as "What a Friend I Have in Jesus," or "I Want to Be a Friend of the Lord," or "Jesus is my friend." And friendship, the term friend, friendship, friends, is all found in the Bible, so it's biblical. And if you're going to speak on the whole counsel of God, then it has to be addressed. So I thought I'd talk about friendship tonight. Jesus, speaking in John the 15th chapter, and verses 13 through 15, says, "Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all things that I heard from my Father I have made known to you." James, writing in James 4 and verse 4, said, "Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." So the Bible has a whole lot to say about friends. The friend, or the need for a friend in this world, is self-evident. We can't go through life alone. We've got to have some friends to help us. I don't know that Jesus had any more love for any one of his apostles than he did the others. John writes about the disciple that he loved. But on a number of occasions, like over in Matthew the 17th chapter, in Mark 5, where Jesus goes upon the Mount of Transfiguration, he takes with him Peter, James, and John. When Jesus goes into the Garden of Gethsemane before his betrayal, he takes with him Peter, James, and John. So those three stand out. But again, I don't think he had any more love for Peter, James, and John, or any more of a friendship with Peter, James, and John than he did with the others. What we need to keep in mind, though, is that if we want friends, first of all, we've got to be friendly. The wise man writes in Proverbs 18, verse 24, "A man who has friends must himself be friendly." This is easier said than done. What do we have to do to be friendly? Who must we look at if we want to select friends? Probably one of the greatest stories about friendship is found in 1 Samuel, the 20th chapter, where we have Jonathan, the son of King Saul, and David. A friendship developed between Jonathan and David that far exceeds any friendship that you can find anywhere else in the Bible. And that's what we want to use as a basis for our text this evening. If you want to follow along, turn over to 1 Samuel and chapter 20, and we'll begin in verse 1. We read in that text, "Then David fled from Naioth in Ramah and went and said to Jonathan, 'What have I done? What is my iniquity and what is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?' So Jonathan said to him, 'By no means, you shall not die. Indeed, my father will do nothing, either great or small, without first telling me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. Then David took an oath again and said, "Your father certainly knows that I have found favor in your eyes." And he has said, "Do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there's but a step between me and death." In the passage, or in this 20th chapter of 1 Samuel, we have this story of Jonathan and David and the friendship that they have. And I think we can look at what is said here and we can come up with six different characteristics of a friendship. In this passage that we just read, I think we can see that the first characteristic would be that of honesty. David was very honest with Jonathan when he told him of the things that he worried about or the things that bothered him. Even though the cause of this worry or this concern happened to be Jonathan's father. But by the same token, Jonathan was just as honest with David when he said the conviction that David's fear was unfounded was true, because everything that Saul did, he advised Jonathan what he was going to do. So Saul hasn't said anything at this time to cause Jonathan to believe that Saul was going to kill David. So the honesty existed between the two. If we look at the honesty that is necessary for true friendship, some of the strongest bonds are created by those who follow their friends into the innermost parts of their mind, where we find things revealed such as hopes and dreams and fears, as David did in this instance, where he revealed the fear that he had that Saul was going to try to kill him. So we find that going deep into the soul is necessary to be an honest friend. Over in Proverbs the 27th chapter in verse 9, the wise man says, "Ointment and perfume delight the heart, and the sweetness of man's friends gives delight by hearty counsel." This term, hearty counsel, actually means counsel of the soul. That counsel that involves the deepest parts of our being. Secondly, to be honest, the friendship must be confidential. If I have a friend and I tell them something, or they tell me something, then that's as far as it should go. It should be confidential. In Proverbs the 16th chapter, verse 28, again the wise man says, "A perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer separates the best of friends." So if I want to tell my friend something and he goes and blabs it to someone else and it gets known throughout the city, then I've lost that best friend, have I not? Again, Proverbs 17, verse 9, "He who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates friends." So this honesty that is in the friendship must require confidentiality between the friends. Honest counsel can strengthen the friendship. It can tear one up, as we just indicated, through gossip, but it can also strengthen the friendship. Think, if you will, of a file, the tool, a file that you grind down the edges of knives and saws and things like that, metal on metal. Again, the wise man says in Proverbs 27, verse 17, as an iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. He strengthens that friendship, just as the iron hones the edge of a tool. But again, to be honest, friendships have to be made based upon honesty and trust. You can't flatter yourself into friendship. People try that. But Proverbs 27, verse 14, who blesses his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it will be counted as a curse to him. We can't shower gifts upon someone and expect to have an honest friend. Or we can't use money to buy honest friendship. Many entreat the favor of the nobility and every man is a friend to one who gives gifts, the wise man says. Our wealth makes many friends, but the poor is separated from his friend. Take a look at the prodigal son, as recorded in Luke, the 15th chapter. While he was off spending his inheritance on riotous living, he had all the friends that he wanted. But as soon as that money was gone, what happened to him? What happened to him? There was no honesty with the friends that he had been living with. So, true friendship requires honesty. Secondly, true friendship requires a mutual aid between the friends. Continuing in 1 Samuel 20, verse 4, so Jonathan said to David, whatever you desire, or you yourself desire, I will do it for you. And David said to Jonathan, indeed, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit with the king and to eat. But let me go, that I may hide in the field until the third day at evening. If your father misses me at all, then say, David earnestly asked permission of me that he might run over to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family. If he says thus, it is well, your servant will be safe. But if he is very angry, then be sure that the evil is determined by him. Jonathan and David had a genuine concern for each other's welfare, and they were willing to aid one another to the extent possible to continue that welfare. Everyone needs a friend who cares enough to do whatever it takes to help him in time of need. Friendship is like a seed that you put into the ground and you put a little fertilizer around it and you water it. And as the plant begins to grow, you may need to prune it a little bit. But it is something that needs to be cultivated. Friendship is the same way. It needs to be cultivated. A true friend will point out your error. He will point out your sin. He will point out your faults. And it may be very painful, and in most cases it would be very painful for him to do so. But he does it because of the mutual aid that is established between the two. In Proverbs 27, verse 6, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. The psalmist writes in Psalms 141 in verse 5, "Let the righteous strike me, it shall be a kindness. And let him rebuke me, it shall be as excellent oil. Let my head not refuse it, for still my prayer is against the deeds of the wicked." A friend will not only tell us the negative, but if the situation warrants, they will give us the praise and the encouragement that we need. But when the time comes for rebuke, because of the mutual aid, the desire to see that friend enter into heaven, he will do the rebuking as well. Friendships can be no better or stronger, or in many cases can be better and stronger than even family ties. Think about that. In Proverbs, the 18th chapter, the latter part of verse 24, the wise man says, "There's a friend who sticks closer than a brother." Proverbs 17, verse 17, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." Proverbs 20 and verse 10, "Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, nor go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor nearby than a brother far away." So the friend can be, and in many cases is, better than blood relative. A friendship that springs from appreciation and practical helpfulness is likely to be more deeply seated than that upon which we have blood relations. A fleshly brother can object to being disturbed by listening to another brother. He can be disturbed listening to tales of woe. The brother reasons concerning such things, and he says, "I have made a good life for myself. I have worked hard for the things that I have. Why doesn't my brother do the same thing?" And this is the exact thing that happened when the prodigal son came home. And his father, seeing him afar off, ran and met him. And he told one of his servants, "Put a ring on his finger and robe him, and put sandals on his feet and kill the fatty calf." And when the older brother, the one who had stayed at home, came in from the fields that afternoon and he hears the music and asks what's going on, how does he react? How does he react? A good close friend, as a mutual aid, will give a good listening and sympathizing ear to our troubles. Jonathan did to David. If we drop on down to verse 14 of 1 Samuel 20, we read, "And you shall not only show me the kindness of the Lord while I still live, but I may not die, or that I may not die, but you shall not cut off your kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord has cut off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "Let the Lord require it at the hand of David's enemies." Now Jonathan again caused David to bow because he loved him. For he loved him as he loved his own soul. In these few verses, we find that for the true friendship to be there, there must also be a commitment. Jonathan said, you remember my heirs down through the periods or down through the years. Jonathan and David made a covenant with each other, promising the commitment for all time. And they did indeed stay friends for as long as Jonathan was alive. And as we're going to see in a moment, David continued with that commitment even after the death of Jonathan. A true friendship is unchangeable and constant. In Proverbs 17, verse 17, a friend loves at all times. One should never forsake a friend. Remember the passage that I read a moment ago in Proverbs 27, verse 10? Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend. Long-standing friendship should not be dropped for no compelling reasons. And the friendship between Jonathan and David was there as long as they were both alive. Fourth characteristic that we find in 1 Samuel 20 is that of loyalty. Loyalty. Dropping down to verse 30. Then Saul's anger was aroused against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman." This is father talking to his son. "Do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to be your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you shall not be established, nor your kingdom. Now therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die." And Jonathan answered Saul, his father, and he said to him, "Why should he be killed? What has he done?" Then Saul cast a spear at him to kill him, by which Jonathan knew that it was determined by his father to kill David. So Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger, and he ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had treated him shamefully. Jonathan was committed. He had a loyalty to David. And that loyalty was based upon an oath that they had taken before the Lord. One of the greatest things in Jonathan's life was when a few years later, Saul had the army of Israel out hunting David, and he went into the forest to encourage David in the Lord. Moving over to the 23rd chapter of 1 Samuel, beginning in verse 15, we read, "And David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a forest. Then Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the woods and strengthened his hand in God and said to him, 'Do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel and I shall be next to you. Even my father Saul knows that.' So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and David stayed in the woods and Jonathan went to his own house." This friendship, this loyalty that existed between Jonathan and David built an everlasting friendship, or a lasting friendship as long as they were both alive. A good friend, as Jonathan illustrates, was there in the time of need. David needed him. David was being hunted like an animal. And Jonathan went to his aid. One of the great sorrows that we find in the story of Job, and Job is a wonderful book, but one of the great sorrows that we find in the book of Job is that the so-called friends of Job that had come to him to comfort him did not do what they had come to do. We read in Job 19, verse 19, "All my close friends abhor me, and those whom I love have turned against me." These miserable comforters who had come to Job in his time of need did not do the comforting that they needed to do. In Job 16, verse 2, "I have many such things," Job says. "Miserable comforters are you all." Probably when his own son Absalom was trying to take over David's kingdom by force, is when David wrote Psalm 69. And in verse 20 he says, "Reproach has broken my heart and I am full of heaviness. I have looked for someone to take pity, but there is none, and for comforters I have found none." David was alone. He didn't have the loyalty from his family that he should have had. Absalom was trying to take the kingdom from him any way that he could. The fifth characteristic of true friendship is genuine emotion. Genuine emotion. In verse 41 of 1 Samuel 20, we read, "As soon as the lad had gone, David rose from a place toward the south, fell on his face to the ground, bowed down three times, and they kissed one another, and they wept together, but David more so." Many of the homosexual persuasion want to think that this was a homosexual relationship between the two, David and Jonathan. It's not there. Can't find it in the text. There was a love there, but that is as far as it goes. When David and Jonathan realized that they were going to have to separate and that they might never see each other again, they kissed each other and they wept bitterly. David more so than Jonathan, because of the tender heart that David had. Great friendships are characterized by strong feelings. And there is no stronger feeling that can be displayed than the affection of Jonathan and David. We, and especially men, must not be embarrassed to express our emotions. I will never forget. I was married, had a child. My mother had died. And I went to see my father. And as Chris and I were getting ready to leave, I put my arms around his neck. First time. Hugged him and told him I loved him. He looked embarrassed. I may have felt a little embarrassed. I don't remember. But it was a common thing after that, every time that we went and saw them. And we were leaving. Even when we got there, we'd hug each other. Shake hands and hug each other's neck. But we shouldn't be embarrassed to express our emotions. After Jonathan's death, David sings a song that is recorded in 2 Samuel chapter 1. Verses 25 and 26, he says, "How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan was slain in your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was wonderful, surpassing the love of women. Yes, there must be genuine emotion and true friendship. And finally, there must be like precious faith. In chapter 20 and verse 42, then Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, since we have both sworn in the name of the Lord, saying, 'May the Lord be between you and me, and between your descendants and my descendants forever.'" So he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. David and Jonathan's friendship had a spiritual dimension to it. And that's what a true friendship should have. They both had strong faith in the Lord. Swearing before the Lord that David would look after the descendants of Jonathan. Some years later, David blessed Jonathan's son, who was lame in both of his feet, and he said to the young man, "Do not fear, for I will surely show your kindness for Jonathan, your father's sake, and will restore to you all the land of Saul, your grandfather, and you shall eat bread at my table continually." David didn't forget the vow that he had made to Jonathan. To reach the highest level of true friendship must be based on a mutual faith and commitment to the Lord. We sing a song which says, "Make friends of God's children." We sing songs, "What a friend we have in Jesus." We have to have the Lord in our lives and in our friendships. Paul told the Romans in Romans 12, verse 13, that distributing to the needs of the saints, give to hospitality. That's to the saints. That's the friendship that we have in the Lord to the fellow saints. In 1 Peter 4 and verse 9, "Be hospitable to one another without grumbling." And John writes in 3 John verses 13 and 14, "I have many things to write, but I do not wish to write to you with pen and ink. But I hope to see you shortly, and we shall speak face to face. Peace to you. Our friends greet you. Greet the friends by name." Friendship is a Bible topic. I hope the lesson's been beneficial this evening. It's not meant to teach first principles, but we want to, at this time, offer the invitation to any that may not have name the name of Christ. If you have the need to do so tonight, we ask that you do so when we stand and sing. If you have any need whatsoever, please come forward as we sing the song of invitation.